Application number 14982, Mr. J. Brown, Reel 13.
Mr. Brown, Reel 13. You were describing the chase of the anti-tank gun by the German tank, Mr. Brown. What happened?
Well, as I said, this tank, German Mark IV, it could outgun the 2-pounder, no problem at all. So it was becoming a chase, not a gallop really, because the wadi was winding down and down, and as I said, this 2-pounder crew, I was watching this with the binoculars, of course. A 2-pounder crow found a little cul-de-sac where it could back off the main wadi. And they snugged into there, where it was obvious what was going to happen, like. They all mounted ready, everything. All I had to do then was watch the tank as it was coming down. It was near stopping and starting. He wasn't quite sure. Then he peeked to get an open stretch and he thought, oh, they're off. Off he went. Probably down his 20, 30 miles an hour. And he just got past his cul-de-sac, and the range must have been no other than about 30, 40 yards when the 2-pounder put about 3 rounds into him. So it didn't do them any good, like. and it brewed up. And from the distance, I didn't see anybody get out, mind. And then the 2-pounder, up there went down the wadi again. They didn't go back up, mind. But anyway, that particular town would have had a very busy 24 hours. Or more, you know. And Colonel Sergeant Ransom was still in charge. I was the only NCO. So, as I said previously, the Germans had tried to, they didn't infiltrate in, they were going to march in off trucks and one thing another. And we'd beat them up pretty badly, like. And we'd had some artillery support, which we didn't even know about. We must have had an OP up there, because it was very rough ground, territory, you know, right along the escarpment. You couldn't see the next body or anything like that. It was just the open plain right in front of you. That was it. And started to dusk in. And I think it was just the second night, maybe the third night. Ransom says, first name term, like, he said, Jack, he said, we better put two or three sections out, like. He says, 3 or 4 men. He said, they're sure to try and infiltrate the in during the night. Well, he had a habit of doing that. He'd get in, get a machine gun position or something like that, get it well dug in, and next morning it was harassment-like. Every thinking mode, he'd pop up, you know. So anyway, put 3 sections out. I was stopping with the central one, slightly forward, and there was a couple hundred yards on the left, same this side. Well, the usual procedure is, without NCOs, the senior soldier. But that doesn't always work. The senior soldiers, the brokers, the most timing, etc. But you see, I was going to take charge of this bloody section. There's always somebody who say, oh, yeah, I'll look after it, you know. See, so that's really enough what happened. So I've been in the central sector, and you had to dig in, like, you know, the best you could. Well, it was solid bloody rock. What a carry on. Scratting the walls the best you could, you know. And this is true. The right-hand section, so the one from Gateshead, Big Hen Whiteford, he's a character. Was N, aye. Plenty of bad language. Every other word was, you know. So I was in such a struggle. Plunk, this, that, and the other. He said, I didn't know how you play that with everybody. We'll never fucking get down here. One of the lads said, hey, boy, they've got a pick over there. There's somebody got a pick over there. There wasn't anybody over there. Shouldn't have been, you know. So, and said, I'll get a end of that pick if I can. But there's one thing, part of our training had been, for a long time, under those circumstances, like under, you know, front, doesn't matter where you went, if you went for a runoff, anything like that, take your personal arms with you, Tommy gun rifle. So all Hen did was shoulder his rifle, battle of the hour, and the typical Gateshead language, the Geordie language, hey, can you lend me a fucking pick? But the thing was, it was a German machine gun section digging in. So the Germans being Germans, you know, they do everything methodically, like. The gun crew, 4 of them, they have a rifle, they don't have submachine guns. They'd pile the rifles nightly away from the dust. They did the same with their with a spandau nicely back. Must keep it nice and clean, you see. So, to dash for the gun, it was either dash for the gun or dash for your life. So the left the bloody gun in the lot. Well, he hadn't got three rounds off. Well, he couldn't hit the clovis inside of the door, shut not down. And he hit nothing, but anyway, off they went. And skittled away over to see what was happening, what the fire was about. And anyway, we had a present there of a German heavy machine gun and four rifles, very nice. By the position, they were pretty well down. So Hen's section took that over and just about turned, you know. But anyway, there was no infiltration during the night. It was just one of those little incidents, like, which you can laugh at, you know. But what happened to the Germans when they got back without arms and ammunition, I don't know, like. But that was it.
Is there a lot of humour when you're in tight situations like
that? Well, there is. It's got to be, especially among the... I found that among the British, you know. We criticise each other like we do, but and we're not very good in a lot of things, but somewhere down below, there's something there, I think, like, that the others haven't got. Even the Germans haven't got it. I don't know what it is, and I think sense of humour was one of it, like, you know. Oh, yeah, some queer bloody things happened, you know. And anyway, to get down to the what happened, next morning we stood down, like, we built our original position on the escarpment, and that's not what happened. Anything more will give a bust in one thing or another, but in the meantime, the 9th Battalion's got a right going over. They've been caught out on the open plain, and waking Shaw down to Victoria across the hard way, lost his life, and that sort of thing. But as I say, C Company, we had no contact with the rest of the battalion. It was such a big area, you know, and there wasn't only us in the area. There's been New Zealanders, there's Indian troops, a lot, and you didn't know where the hell anybody else was at. It wasn't like miners day, everybody knocking about. You're actually lonely, if you put that word, as a company. So there we were, and not looking for us, but finding us accidentally. I just don't know what happened. The padre called Nesbitt, and a little Greek officer called Petra Cassino. He was a London Greek, mind. He spent all his life in, I don't know whether he was born in London, but a little fat bloke. He smoked millions of Turkish cigarettes. Nothing but Turkish cigarettes. He smoked day and night and this, that and that. He's dead now, by the way. But forget that. They found C Company by accident. Where the hell they were lost or not, I don't know. But of all things, he had a Bren gun carry with him and a driver. Don't even know how he got that. But anyway, when they come in, we had an officer called Jones. He wasn't very happy with his chef. He had a little wound in his arm, and I don't know, really. Young nature being what it is. But Petro took over, like. And we knew that was going to be the fourth night we were going to come out. So, come up with Ransom Company. He said, we're getting an office. He said, Petro. I just called him Petro. I didn't go Petro Casino. You know. He said, Petro's here. I said, oh, the hell, he's found us. He said, no, Padre's here. I said, oh, well, it's reinforcements anyway. He said, we're pulling out tonight. He says, how and where, I just don't know, you see. But anyway, later on we found out, in the meantime, the rest of 151 Brigade had pulled down on the coastal plain and had consolidated there. We would have an extra protection out in that. Of course, they were coming out that night, and I understand they did come out in tow columns as well. They found tow were a bit of a struggle, like. And the Germans had had to go farther down to come up the coastal plain, but the New Zealanders had stopped them, and British tanks, see. And then there'd been some tanks broke through. At one point, attacked 151 Brigade, but they were consolidated there. But our 2-pounder anti-tank guns, the 8th Battalion 2-pounder anti-tank guns, give them 1,000. And it's a funny thing, I never heard of it before, didn't hear it since. They were being issued with American ammunition, the Southeast 2-pounder gun. Well, as I've said before, our 2-pounder is 300, 400, 600 yards, okay. Now, here they were able to engage these tanks over 1,000 yards and knock them out. Without 2-pounders, which were basically unable to do the job. But the story was for American ammunition. So somewhat wrong somewhere down the line. But anyway, they'd knocked two, three tanks out and several armoured cars. So the Germans withdrew. So that was up to them to organise to come out that night. As far as C Company was concerned, we got organised. We had three troop carrying wagons, you know, down in the Wadi Lake. We had three troop carriers.
Had you lost your commanding officer? Was he with you, C Company? C Company CEO, was he with you?
There's a bloke called Jones, we lost him, but there was another Jones, there was two Joneses, you know. There was two Jones, we lost him, and this one, was he full lieutenant? Well, I didn't know, I don't know bloody what he would. The company sergeant major and all them had been lost coming out of Gazali, you know. And left Joe Rance on the colour side, and he got promoted later on to company sergeant major, and he got killed at Marath. But forget that. They're wondering about the organisation at night, and we were up on the top of this nice defensive position, like, in case that would happen, like, at a Bren Guns section in there. Who should come up with the Padre? He says, I'm taking the patrol out. So I'm taking the patrol out along the escarpment, he says, and we're going to try to find a player for the wagon. You just couldn't go over the top like that, you know. There was, and so we can get the wagons out tonight when we go out. So he says, it might be dark after I get back. He says, so don't shout us up. I said, okay. I said, well, there'll be somebody want to know what's what. I said, just shout Durham Light Infantry or something like that, up the Durhams, anything like that, it'll be okay. But anyway, he wasn't aware, just not much more than an hour, daylight, and he come back. And he said he's found the ideal spot, you know, no more about a mile and a half along, like something like that. So we got organised, darkness fell onto the wagons, and Petro and the party was in the carrier, led the way along the escarpment, you know, slowly away, like, because it's rough country. And Jones and the 1500 were at the back. There was an NCO with him, but he was a transport NCO, Corporal Young. He'd be longshoreman drawdowns, went to school with him. He had nothing to do with the infantry work. But anyway, what had happened, they had been trailing on behind, you know. We're hoping for the best, which was a bad thing to do. But anyway, way along the escarpment, steady way. It wasn't really moonlight, it was starlit, you know. There was not good vision, but you could see what's happening. Oh, it's a lovely place straight away up on the plane. No bother at all. There's only one thing went wrong. By the Padre being along and coming back, there's a German mixed column had lagged up there, right on that bloody spot. Because they had realised if anybody's coming out there, come up here, you see. Just go, oh, Christ, there's a couple of tanks over there. There's wagons. These blokes are running around all the time, like, shouting at each other, trying to be busy. Well, straight away I shouted, no truck, only I shouted, get the helmets off. Because in the desert, your drills are all bleached the same colour. Without a helmet on, you're all on the same side, see? Off the bloody helmets, you know. The lads are sitting there facing outwards and this, that, and the other. And slowly away, and some of the lads were shouting a little bit Italian, you know, Tedeschi, viva Tedeschi, you know, listen, they were shouting back, our allies, the Italians, you know. Anyway, plodding on, it was quite a big column. Just creeping on in the hurry, and Bren Gun carry away in front. I didn't know if Petra was smoking, he usually was, he would be. And then all of a sudden, there was what looked like a little fat bloke. He starts screaming at the top of his voice that he was diving for one of the gun pits, you know. Hadn't time to shout fire, every bugger opened together. He must have gotten a dozen or 20 up his ass. And then the driver's pedal down, zigzag, zigzag, you know, con. You know, and we were firing back at anything, you know, the trucks, the lots, any damage we could do. But by the time they got into the pits and the sweep and all the Western Desert were chasing, we were gone. Aye. And I don't know how far it is from there to this Alamein line. I've no idea. We're travelling most of the night. We wouldn't be really pedalling on, you know.
You said three truckloads. You must have lost quite a number of men from Gazala.
Oh, aye, well, you're talking about, well, the company wasn't so bad, so we probably had 50% losses, I would imagine. Some of them be prisoners, some be wounded, you know, and all that, like, I would say 50%. There's about a dozen on each truck. Why, normally you're talking about a company, three platoons, maybe 120, 130 men, including the officers, you know. There's all down 36, 40, about 40 odd, inclusive of everybody. And paddling on during the night. Anyway, it's obviously another German column was lagged up for the night, you know. They dropped anchor. They were just pulling away alongside him, you know, the name on 50. And out there, I don't know, it'd be two or three blokes. There was a bivouac I must have waited from the corner. I wanted a bit of fresh air or something like that. But by the time the driver saw them, he was near there, so he just run over the top of the bugger. I said, I hope the springs is all right. It wouldn't help them inside, mind. So the lads give another few bursts, you know, and pedal down and off, like. But that sort of thing was happening. But anyway, when dawn broke, we were going towards Egypt. We had no idea really how far we're off the coast or what, you know. Lee Cook was laying out the instructions. But we hit a minefield wire. This must have been, we must have been well off the coast or far the main station, as such as it is and such as that. So common sense said, petrol would work this out. The bulk of the Germans and Italians will be in the towards the coast. We thought that, like, you know, which was probably right. So we turned right and went down the wire and went down, about 3-5 miles maybe, and there was a bunch of Indians laying mines, and there was a minefield gap there. And when got there, there was about three, way in the distance, German tanks coming out the south, and they started a shell light. But behind the line, they had 25-pounders in position then. And they started belting a few over, so they pulled back out the road. And we pulled into the, through the gap, pulled back about a mile, and they were exhausted, like, you know. And the Indians was busy there. That was in the south sector. We knew it was south, like, but it was real south central sector was there. And anyway, the dribs and drabs started to come in. There was trucks coming in with about, like, A company and all them, what others, you know, B company, D company, what was left them and all that. Bloody anti-tank guns and that, they were drifting through. It was surprising how many got through, you know. And there was a water tank where there was blokes hanging on the side, some of them, you know. There's a really water tank coming in, not very big, you know, water tank. It's about half a dozen old blokes, they lie on the top. When they get off, what they're bringing in for, there's one little Jerry there. The poor bug was nearly dead with exhaustion. All these fellas on top of him, aye. What a pretty state he's in. They give him a drink of water to pull him round. Why they brought him, I didn't know, didn't they? But he was there anyway.
You said that when you got back, you were pretty tired.
Oh, why, it went on so long, you know. We starting from Gazala, you know, and then this, that, and the other. And
what
you, you didn't seem to notice the tiredness and the weariness, like, till you find there's a moment to relax. Is that what you put? Then all of a sudden you're ready, you say, Christ, I could sleep for a fortnight. They don't let you sleep for a fortnight, like. But anyway, from there, we got them thrown, odd anti-tank guns and that, about turned, like, well, we didn't even dig in. But there's obviously no, there couldn't be the German, even the Germans wasn't strong enough to put a great big attack in the south, you know. And in the meantime, there were teaming Australians, New Zealanders and British from Palestine into the north. That was right into the north, you know, that was the most vulnerable point, like, where the coast road was. So, what, a couple of days, we pulled back another 25 miles. And then we pulled back to the rail head at Amaria, about maybe 20 miles outside Alex, you know. So the rail centre was. So it's just a hell of a big tented area. And the area, the RAF had a field, had a landing ground just about a couple of miles down there. And there was a continual wind blowing from the south, you know. Wasn't a cold wind, it was a warm wind. But every time these sods took off and landed, there was a bloody sandstorm, you know. It was an uncomfortable place, but still you were glad to be there. And we start to try and settle down. Had a roll call. The whole brigade out, you know, battalion by battalion, had a roll call. Oh, Christ, there's a lot missing, like. And anybody, if the new bloke had died, that they shout out of, wounded or, you know, missed that and the other. And anyway, A company and D company go down and out. They split them up between C and B, you know, and still not up to strength. And I think it was Major Chambers. He was he down adjutant then? But anyway, Major Chambers, he'd been signal officer, he was major. He went down to the Delta to form two new companies. A and D had to be reformed. And they were going to rejoin the battalion if and when such times as that, which was quite a long time, as a matter of fact. They'd be getting lads out the base and drafts from Britain and such as that. Anyway, we've got a few reinforcements and this, that and the other, and they're giving us a odd night, a few hours in Alexandria, which was a change, you know, transport was on, maybe about 20 miles or something like that. It put you in touch with civilization again. And
how did you find that, Alexandria?
Oh, great, marvellous. You've been to Alexandria, have you? No. Why, Cairo is such a vast place, it stinks to high heaven, it's hot, it's dusty. Well, Alexandria's right on the coast, you know. And have a bloody seafront, not the end of Thames City, Blackpool, but nearly as long as Blackpool, oh, for miles and miles, you know, with a little sandy beach and all that. But right down towards the Western Desert Tide, that is the real Wog Quarter, you know. And there's a bloody big tannery down there, and I stink. My God, you're glad to get up this way, you know, and you get central where the main part of the town, all the main hotels and that's, you know, Muhammad Ali Square and all this, like. And it's quite nice, as a matter of fact, and clean. And up the far side, maybe about 4 miles up or something like that, Sidi Bish is an area, it's a bit high class. We had a divisional rest camp up there, and the Australians had one as well. It was a tented camp. And if you'd been there, anybody was able to get a few days out of the desert, that's where you went. But if you wanted to draw your credits, you could go and stop in Alex for your leave, put up one of the hotels, you know. Some did that, like. Or find one of these Armenian girls to sleep with for a few days. Not everybody, mind. And but anyway, it was a Maria. But that wasn't done there. No, the Australians, everything, British, have scraping the bottom of the barrel, banging them up in the Alameda line, you know. And
how did you feel? What was the morale like after this, in effect, this
retreat? You're a bit shattered, but you weren't. I didn't hear anybody that would say, well, this is the right and carry on, isn't it? You know, one thing and another, and this was no bugger in charge. That they were blaming Richie and that. We should have beat him up at Gazala. I mean, it's easy to say from my point of view, we should have beat him. He squandered his tank, squandered. He didn't use the 50th Division the way he should have used it. We were a fighting division. He should have said, to all intents and purposes, I've went through it before, 50th Division was going to be lost once he'd cut it off and cut it into Brook. Well, it didn't work out that way. I would, thanks to our divisional commander, plan it out and brick out and go around them. Would have been better, even now I say that, if it. We had ammunition for quite a while, we had water, and the water wells was farther up. Benghazi was farther up. There was everything we wanted there. We should have went forward instead of back. And how long we would have lasted longer than him. See what I mean? Of course, his line of communication then was stretched. We'd stopped his supplies. I'm not an amateur strategist, like, but I say it the way a lot of people saw it. But anyway, when I was at Amaria, we were totally disappointed in one thing and another, and commiserating about the mates had lost and all that, you know, and just wondering how this sort of thing would happen. But morale-wise, they weren't, you know, we beat and this, that and the others, and out of that, no. And we still wasn't bloody done. Not being told the plan, I couldn't say why I could win anything, but Auchinleck had took over then, like, he's quite good, Auchinleck, he took over from Richie, like, but I think the idea wasn't to win anything, it must have been to knock the Germans off balance, knock Rommel off balance, till they got more equipment and reinforcements from Britain or from anywhere. So they decided they wanted two columns, but there was only a B and C company, so we won the toss, it wasn't a toss, but we were lucky again. B company had to go in with a battalion Australians, crew companies Australians, and what tanks we had and one thing and another, that the bash through his minefield and sort them out, this, that and the other. What the objective was supposed to be, I didn't know, I think, was to knock them off balance. There's only one thing wrong. The South Africans had the job of cleaning the minefield, you know, you'd eat at night. It's not that long, you know, not a hard bloody job if you know the job. Only that they hadn't done it, like, for what reason, I didn't know. They used to criticise the South Africans, they used to say a lot of them's German bastards, you know, speaking Afrikaans and such as that. They weren't all like that, but that was the opinion you used to have. You used to criticise the South Africans, you know. And then losing Tobruk, we packed in at Tobruk. It's easy said than done, I mean, you depend on your who's in charge. But anyway, B Company had to go in with this column. Oh, they got cut to bloody bits again. Poor B Company, aye. Well, our column, they took us up. Well, they didn't tell us what it was. No, at that time, nobody told you now, do you know? You said, you're going there, you're going to do that, say. And I think it was this Alamel Halfa Ridge. After Montgomery took over, that was his first battle, and his winning battle, just behind the high ground, you know. That is up there, along with other troops digging in. And we're up there about bloody fortnight or something, right? Every day, red hot. We're under artillery range, but he wasn't shelling all day, you know. And we're out of machine gun range, such as that. But now and again, you know, wee, and then you just lay on the bottom, say, till it explodes, and then you start again. Well, we've got all the windy picks and using the explosives out of mines and such as that. We've blasted some good positions, aye. And we had to mark not only infantry positions, anti-tank gun positions, and tanks hull down. And must have been looking to the bloody future. That's where Rommel got wrong there, like. He played him at his own game later on.
This was still between the time of Auchinleck in command when you were...
Auchinleck was still in command then, yes, aye. And anyway, back we come again, and the slimmed HQ company down, everything down, right to the bottom of the battle, as far as I could, you know, to try and make B and C up to some kind of strength. And then we had another short space of time, and they said, this Montgomery took over, like. So nobody'd heard of him. Brought two new car commanders with him. Lease, was it, and... the one. Oh, well, yeah, man. The Durham man. Christ. Come back in a minute. But anyway, this Monty said, what the hell's he going to do? I've ever got him from and all that. But straight away, he made a big difference. He issued handbills telling you who he was, what the situation was, and what he was going to do, not what Rommel's going to do. And he even said, he says, Rommel's going to make his last attack to get through into Egypt and the Nile Delta. He said, I know exactly where he's coming. He's going to make it easy for him in the south central sector. He's going to make it easy for him. He said, he's got to attack the Alamel Alpha. He said, he can't pass that. He says, and then we're going to show him what's what like. Words to that effect. And it worked that way. See?
Did this have an instant effect upon your morale and so on, this new command?
Why, this was promises, you know. See, so this at least some bugger knows where you like, you see. But when it did happen, all they did were us. We didn't say the Alamel Alpha battle. They're just halfway between there and Alexander. The dashes up and we made positions out in the open desert in case he decided to pass the... What we would have done, I didn't know, because we're still on the bloody ground. We just tripped him up, I suppose, till they got him on the flank. But anyway, nothing happened. We heard about the Alamel Alpha and said, hey, this guy's right. This Montgomery knows his bloody stuff. Because Rommel had to pull back. He lost 50-odd tanks or something. And then at that particular time, the Air Force was getting really oxidized. We were starting to get a few Spitfires, you know. And they had a mixed formation of bombers. What was they used to call them? The Deadly 18 or something. They were Mitchells and Sally Fox, something like that. He used to come over 18 at a time, just trying to just... that bloody slow, and it didn't seem that high. But, Christ, the damage they used to do was nobody, you know, on German positions and that. So anyway, I was back to Amarillo again, scraped the bottom of the bottle, got into some sort of... We weren't up to strength by no means. Still only had two companies. So at the 8th battalion, I was two bloody half-company strong. We had to take over the Alamein line from the New Zealanders.
What date would this be?
Oh, Christ. Didn't know. Why? So you didn't write the dates down?
You'd get back to Alamein in the July, I would think. You'd get back into the Alamein position in the July, so we're basically talking about August, are we?
July, August. September.